Since 1980, Gerald Celeni, publisher of the Trends Journal, provides timely and accurate trend forecasts that have earned him the reputation as the most trusted name in trends. The proof is in the hundreds of accurate forecasts Celeni has made over the past 30 years. The 1987 stock market crash, the clean food trend, the dot-com bust. The Trends Journal alerts subscribers to early subtle signs of crucial trends that will shape our future. It allows readers to anticipate change, recognize the implications, and take proactive strategies. Put your money where your mind is with Gerald Celeni's brilliant and indispensable Trends Journal. Go to trendsjournal.com or call 845-331-3500. That's 845-331-3500. To our special guest, Lindsay Perrigo, and we're talking about his book, The One Tenor, and the tenor himself we're going to listen to this hour. The early years, very early years, as Lindsay mentioned, 1945, on this national live national program called the Celeni's Hour, where Mario somehow was asked to sit in for one of the giants of the Metropolitan Opera, I guess, at that time. Here's this 24-year-old kid getting tabbed to be on live primetime television, basically, in living color, in front of God knows how many millions of people. And he came through. He hit it out of the park.
He absolutely did, and as you say, standing in for Jan Pierce, one of the established tenors at the Metropolitan, it was not something he could afford to muck up. And indeed, live, which must be terrifying under any circumstances.
I'm scared right now, and we're live. So
we do have a couple of instances where he fluffed his lines, but very quickly recovered. And of course, once you fluff them live, there's no going back. So now that they're out there, we can hear him.
Well, that was from Blue Skies. I told you the story about that, didn't I? I think I did.
No, I don't recall it.
Well, Natalie Bodanya was the established opera star who was singing a duet with him of the song Blue Skies. And Mario, again, was a kid, and I spent some time with her in Santa Barbara. And she told me about being in that live broadcast with him. They came to rehearsal, and he came with a couple of guys, and he was so, she said he was so nervous, and he didn't know exactly when to come back in for that particular part of the song, Blue Skies. Anyway, she said, what I did was I grabbed his hand and I squeezed it when he was supposed to come in. And it worked beautifully. Except during the live performance, they separated the two of them, she on one microphone and he on the other. And why he muffed the entry.
Right. I'm just trying to think where that point is. It never saw the sun. Is that where
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes,
that was exactly the phrase, never saw the sun. He was a bit late, but she'd squeeze his hand, and he knew he'd never saw,
right.
And she wasn't there to squeeze his hand.
But it's so barely noticeable, you wonder if it actually happened. You have to go back and play it. But he also, I think, fluffed the lines of America the Beautiful when they were doing that.
Yeah. Well, that's okay. All right, let's listen to A Pretty Girl Is Like a Melody. This is an old Irving Berlin song.
And,
here's this 24-year-old kid. That's an old recording, so just, go back with us in time and enjoy. Here we go.
If the Ziegfeld Follies glorified the American girl, It was Irving Berlin who painted her picture in music. Here's a song that reflects all the beauty and charm of its lovely inspiration. A Pretty Girl is Like a Melody, sung by Mario Lanza and the Celanese Chorus.
A pretty girl is like a melody that haunts you night and day, just like the strain of a haunting refrain. She'll start upon the marathon and run around your brain. You can't escape. She's in your memory by morning, night, and noon. She will leave you and then come back again. A pretty girl is just like a pretty in your memory by morning, night, and noon. She will leave you and come back again. A pretty girl is just like a melody, just like
I don't know if that was the first song that he sang for the Celanese Hour, but it was probably the first or second. I think he did four programs, didn't he, during the summer? Something like that.
Several, yes. I was just about to say, for someone who apparently was very nervous, it didn't show at all, did it?
Oh,
he sounded as though he'd been doing it for years.
Yeah, he hit every note, every word perfectly.
Yeah.
And here's that. I'm going to move through these. This is, as we mentioned earlier, for all of you listening, All Alone. Now, it's short, and I'm just going to play half of it. The second half is Natalie Bodanya. All Alone by the Telephone. And this is Mario, a kid, 24, and listen when he says, what are the final three phrases? If you are, where you are, and how you are.
If you are all alone too.
Yeah. And listen to how he says those. It's really something. As I say, that lets you know right then and there, this man had something utterly unique. He was inside the lyrics. He was living the lyrics at that age. Here we go. Let me back this and set it. And, okay. All Alone.
Alone by the telephone, there is no one else but you. Wondering
Okay, there are those three phrases in the song. And there's another thing to mention. The way he had an ability to make the sound, ooh, I'm a professional singer, ooh, when he said blue and you and new, anything with ooh, it had a special resonance. It was almost incandescent.
Well, I actually touch on this in one of the essays in my book. His ooh sound was a marvel of nature, and what made it remarkable is that most singers have some difficulty pronouncing a pure oo vowel. They have to modify it more towards or ah. They have to keep it open. If they try to do it as a pure oo, it becomes tight. And so rather than do that, they open it, but then it's not a pure oo. Now, he could do a pure oo without opening it up. It was absolutely recognizable as an oo vowel and keep all the resonance that all the other vowels had. So he had great consistency of tone through all the vowels.
Right.
But then the consonants too, and it's just amazing to me, sitting here now listening to all of this on a smartphone, I can hear his tongue hitting his teeth. I mean, every consonant is so clear. And it occurred to me during the previous song where he says, you can't escape, it's in your something. And that word escape.
Yeah, you can hear every letter.
Somebody doing it now, yeah. A Moronial would say escape with an X.
Oh, yeah.
But you can hear him very precisely say, you can't escape, she's in your melody. Just the purity, the clarity of the
word. You could hear every letter of the word.
In particular. Yes.
You could hear the letters of the word. And Noel Till said the same thing. The ooh sound was, he owned it. It was just there. I'll just play the first 45 seconds of this again, and I'll pitch it. I'll let you listeners know when you're going to hear blue, you. It's right there. Here we go. And this is at age 24. He's got this ability that's amazing, just amazing.
Alone by the telephone.
No one else but you.
One else but you.
He didn't push that.
Alone, I'm so alone, waiting for a ring, a ping, a ling. I'm all alone every evening.
With two. So there you go.
It just occurs to me, I think on your CDs you've got Marquita there, haven't you?
Yeah, somewhere.
At the end of that, he goes up to, I think it's a high B flat on an oo vowel. I need you, Marquita, I do. And that spectacularly illustrates what we've just been talking about. It's easy enough to maintain a pure oo down in your middle and lower registers, but when you go high, the temptation is to spread it open. And he doesn't. He just keeps that lovely, focused, narrow oo sound, but it remains as resonant as all the other vowels. So in that song, Marquita, which I'm sure is on one of your three CDs.
I'm queuing it up now.
Right. I need you, Marquita, I do. And again, the word blue, I think, appears in that on an A, and it's the same thing, a lovely, pure ooh vowel.
Now, when you listen to this song, this is 5 years further down the road from 1945, 1951, 6 years. And he gets up in this song, and it had been recorded by a number of other people. It was a World War II minor standard. And he's up at the top, and he's skating on this high range of notes. It's just amazing. It's dangerous, but he loved it.
It is. It's a tightrope, but he gets across.
All right, let's see if I've got it queued up right. Here we go. All right, here's Marquita.
Marquita, Marquita, I still hear you calling me back to your arms once again. Upon me, since then life has all been in vain. All has been sadness without you, Marquita. Each day finds me lonely and blue. I want you, Marquita. I need you, Marquita. I do. I still feel the spell of your last kiss upon me. Since then, life has all been in vain. All has been sadness without you, Marquita. Each day finds me lonely and blue.
That was quite a blue, all right.
Yeah. Anybody else would have said, door. I need you, Marquita, I door.
That's right.
That's the way someone else would have handled that.
They
was an unmistakable, unambiguous ooh vowel. And the same thing actually applies to his E's. The same comments that I made about the oohs apply generally to his E's as well. It's a difficult vowel not to modify as you go higher. And I just remembered, listening to it then, that he makes it harder for himself by transposing the thing up half a tone when the orchestra comes in. So he's had to hit all those high A's in the first stanza, and the second time he's got to go up half a tone, they become B flats. So he didn't duck out of making it difficult. That was a real high wire performance.
Well said, high wire indeed. What do you want to play next? We can play Musica Proibita if you'd like. Examples?
That would be a nice change of pace. You did that, and we'll hear the nice, soft way that he begins that, and you can understand the reaction from the Gili people. I mean, Gili would have done a perfectly competent job, but the dynamic variation in Mario's performance is singular. Interestingly, he didn't do it that way when he recorded it in the last year of his life, 1959. He recorded that song on the LP called Caruso Favorites, but he didn't make the soft entry the way he does in this Coke performance that you're about to play.
Ogni sera di sotto al mio balcone sento cantare una canzone d'amore. Più volte la ripeto un bel garzone.
te mi sento forti il cuore e battere mi sento forti il cuore. Oh, quanto è dolce quella melodia, oh, com'è bella, quanto m'è gradita. Chi vorrei baciare i tuoi capelli neri, le labbra tue e gli occhi tuoi severi. Vorrei morire innamorata, tesor mio, qui sotto i vidi eri a passeggiare, e lo ritira al solito andar. Vorrei baciar i tuoi capelli neri, le labbra tue e gli occhi tuoi severi. Stringimi a cara, stringimi al tuo cuore, fammi provar le braccia
Wow. That's more than singing. I don't know what it is, but it never ceases to amaze me. You too.
Well, I think we can understand what he's complaining about. His mother has forbidden him to sing to this beautiful girl who walks by his window every day.
Mm-hmm.
And if she allowed him to sing like that, it would frighten the horses for sure. And no doubt cause a scandal.
Very good. All right. Now, that was an Italian song, a Neapolitan song for you newcomers to this kind of singing. That was not opera. It was simply Italian. And Mario sang many Neapolitan songs in Italian. He grew up in an Italian-speaking home here in Philadelphia.
Well, he sang them with the Neapolitan dialect. And I always thought that when he did that, I thought, that's rough Italian, and he hasn't got it right. And I jumped into a cab one day in Wellington, here in New Zealand, a cab to take me to work. And lo and behold, the cab driver was Neapolitan. And when he told me that, I said, oh, Caruso, Gigli. And he said, ah, you left out the greatest of them all, Mario Lanza. And then he burst into a song called Santa Lucia Lontana, Baritone Bastimente. And his Neapolitan was exactly the way Mario does it on the recordings. And it turned out, in fact, that people who are not told that he wasn't Neapolitan are astonished to hear that, because he's got the dialect off so well.
How can that be? How can that be? He had an ear. He could also mimic other singers, and
that's
I think that was part of the gift.
Yes. Yes, and I believe the Neapolitan is similar to the Abruzzi dialect that Mario's parents would have spoken at home when Mario was growing up. So I think the similarity would have helped him get the Neapolitan off pat.
Right. You don't know this. I have an RCA 44BX microphone, which is exactly the same microphone he used and everybody used for 20, 25 years, from the 40s to the mid-50s. And it's a wonderful microphone. So what you're hearing is the truest sound that was capable of being recorded then. And his manager, Al Teitelbaum, was a friend of mine, and we used to spend many hours talking, and he said, there is no way that the recording instrumentation at that time could capture the fullness and the richness of the colors in his voice. He said it was better than any recording I've ever heard.
Which was also the testimony of Sammy Cahn, the songwriter who wrote or at least the lyrics for
Be My Love. Yeah.
And he said no mechanical reproduction captured the brilliance of that voice. He had a loud pedal and a soft pedal in his throat. And you remember he said it scared the hell out of you. It was so startling.
Sammy, I had a chance to talk to Sammy Cahn, and I asked him. We were talking, and I simply dropped the name. And it was as if someone had jarred him. He kind of leaned back, and his eyes went up, and he looked up, and he said, oh, my God. And then he started to sing the ending of Be My Love, which he wrote. And when he got to the final high note, he stopped singing and just took his index finger and pointed straight up over his head. It's up there. He said, I can't even mimic that. It was a wonderful moment, and you're right. All right, here's another one for you.
We could make believe I love you. Only make believe that you in pretending. Couldn't you, couldn't I, couldn't we make believe our lips are blending in a phantom kiss, or two or three?
Darn believable.
Make-believe stuff. There was the oo vowel again, and the E's were pretty spectacular as well. As I said, it is remarkable when you think that he never thought these would ever see the light of day, those Coca-Cola performances, the one-off radio performances, as far as he knew. And here we are, all those years later. And you wonder, if he knew that, would he have said, oh, let's do another take? You had one or two blemishes here and there. But the standard is remarkably high throughout the Coca-Cola. We now have the entire entire 15 months worth of the Coca-Cola show performances, and the standard is remarkably high throughout. And he, I mean, clearly was in very high spirits through that time. It was the most, probably the most productive time of his career, and everything was going so well. We had no idea of the storms that lay ahead.
No, it was. Who could have imagined? You just couldn't. He had the world by the tail at that time.
Yes, yes.
All right.
Placido Domingo was to call it Lanza Fever many years later.
Well, he was the first superstar, really before, as they say, that term was even invented. He was mobbed wherever he went.
Yes. I'm just looking at your CD covers. The Vesti La Juba that you have there, is that the one for Hedda Hopper?
Yeah.
Because
yes.
That's pretty remarkable. It would be good if we could give that an airing before we finish today.
All right, let me cue that up. I think that particular... Now, this is 1950 for the Hedda Hopper radio show. Hedda Hopper was a gossip columnist in Hollywood, along with Luella Parsons, many of you remember. And she had a radio program, and she claims to have pretty much discovered Mario. Of course, a lot of people made that claim. But he sang two songs on her program, Be My Love and Vesti La Juba. I think, Lindsay, for my money, this is the most remarkable Vesti that he recorded. And I would love to be able to get in there and take that orchestra, peel it away, and tone it down. It's a little, it competes, but he still, he more than excels. It's a marvelous performance.
The orchestra's, the arrangement is also souped up, which is why it doesn't really come into consideration. If you're evaluating all the Vestis, which I do in my book, I have my particular favorite. But this one, his performance is quite remarkable.
All right, let's see how I get it ready. Okay, I had to change discs. Now let me... Now this is again 1950 radio, and keep in mind that one time Mario had no idea that this was ever going to be available to anybody else again, and he gave it his best for Hedda Hopper, his good friend, and here it is.
quite an extraordinary piece of singing.
For our listeners, he had a 50-inch chest, and when he began at the diaphragm, and you know singing better than I do, Lindsay, but he could push and control like no one I've ever heard. It's just astonishing.
Well, it was noteworthy during that performance. I hadn't realized before how slowly he takes the aria, which again makes it tougher for himself to sustain those long phrases. But in that high part, su tu amor infranto, he took that really slowly, and it's way up there in the stratosphere, but he maintained the consistency of tone throughout. And the passion, my goodness me. I mean, he really brought that aria to life, the heartbreak and the rage, the utter sadness. It's all there. What a sense of drama he had.
All right, let's see. We have enough time for three or four more. What do we have here? How about Granada? That's an old standard. I don't know if you want to hear that.
Maybe a little hackneyed. Are we going off your CDs?
Yeah, we can do that. We can do anything you want here.
I'll tell you one that's really, really well sung, just beautifully tender. And I remember playing this a lot when Mario's son Damon died a few years back, and you recall. I had become quite friendly with him and stayed there on several occasions. And this is one of the songs we played after his death. I'm talking about Memories, which is...
Oh, that's timeless.
On your I'll See You in My Dreams.
Yeah. All right, let me get that out. That is...
It's track 23 on that CD, I'll See You in My Dreams CD.
Okay.
And again, it starts with beautiful softness and then does a crescendo in the second verse.
You know my CDs better than I do. All right, hold on. Let me advance this and we'll get it. Now, for you people who've been listening to music for a long time, you may remember this song. What is the vintage of this song? What year is approximately?
Ooh, 1920s, I think.
30s at the latest,
sure.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, number 23. Here we go. Now, listen to the sweetness of this. And again, the interpretive genius of living the lyrics.
Memories, memories, dreams of love so true.
You left me alone.
What do you say? You kind of get speechless after a while.
It's just such a simple song that he transforms into such an overwhelming experience. And just the simple expedient of doing the first verse softly and then coming in more loudly with the second one, again, half a tone up over the first, and then, of course, that spectacular ending. And again, notice the purity of the e-vowel, memories. It really was just so special.
Yeah, all right. We've got time. I'm going to squeeze three more in here. So here's one, an up-tempo, to give you an idea. Now, this man, for those of you listening, remember, is adapting to lyrics, to cadence, to a feeling of a song that the songwriter and the person who scored the music for it were trying to convey. And he adapted brilliantly to so many different kinds of songs. And here's another one. Totally different approach.
When they begin the beginning, it brings back the sound of music so tender. It brings back a night of tropical splendor. It brings back a memory evergreen. I'm with you once more under the stars, and down by the shore an orchestra's playing, and even the palms seem to be swaying when they begin the beginning. To live it again is past all endeavor, except when that tune clutches my heart, and there we are swearing to love forever and promising never, never to part. What moments divine, what rapture serene, till clouds came along to disperse the joys we had tasted. And now when I hear people curse the chance that was wasted, I know but too well what they mean. So don't let them begin the beginning. Let the love that was once a fire remain an ember. Let it sleep like the dead desire I only remember when they begin the beginning. Once more, darling, I love you, and we suddenly know what heaven we're in when they begin the beginning. When they begin the
Yeah, I'll second that.
Old Blue Eyes must have had green eyes listening to the way Mario could soar up into those high notes.
You know what Sinatra said, don't you? He said, if I had a voice like that, I would put a birdcage over my head, have it welded shut, and never let anyone near me.
Oh, no, I didn't know that.
That's a quote.
That particular track, although it is very well done, and it must have left Sinatra boggle-eyed, is one that I would have gone back and done again had I known that it was going to see the light of day in subsequent years. There's something not quite right around about, and now when I hear people curse the chance that was wasted, I can't quite identify what it is, but I think he's going on the words people curse. I think he's sharp, off-key. He's certainly off-key.
Well, the pace of it is why I played it, just to give it a whole different...
It's fantastic, but it's just one of those things that I often think, now, if Mario had known that we were all going to be listening to this, and it wasn't just a one-off, no doubt they would have gone back and fixed that.
No, I agree. All right, I think we've got time for one more, and I'm going to play Thine Alone. That one is always been one of my very favorites. It's hard to choose, of course, but...
I can't remember which one is on your CD. Is that the Coke version?
This is the Coke version that lay...
Right.
No, it hadn't been heard for a long time.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right.
Let me get the number right here. Okay.
And this has a high B conclusion, so your listeners should hang on to their hairpieces.
He rolls right up to it, and there's three notes. And here we go.
Tell me, why is there a doubt within thy heart? My own, tell me why. I but fear the time will come when we must part. Alas, I should die evermore. By day, by night, I'll dream of you, my darling, my love is but thine.
It's, we're supposed to say something here, but I don't know what to say.
Somebody did say that a little bit of Mario died every time he sang, and when you hear him singing like that, my goodness, the effort, the intensity, the absolute conviction, total passion that went into it, you can believe that, in a sense, a little bit of him died every time he did that.
Terry,
it's exhausting.
Yeah, Terry and Al both told me, and they were at between the two of them, most every recording session he ever went to and recorded. And Terry told me, he said after he would sing, he would go over into the corner basically and just sit by himself with his head down. He was that spent.
Mm. Mm. Spent is the word, yes, and it was especially apparent with that one. Of course, we all knew and we'd given warning that that ending was coming, but it still defies belief when you actually get to it. Can he do it? Oh, my.
Well, you see now why I think all of you who haven't heard Mario Lanza before, or even if you have, you'll understand why all tenors eventually are compared to him. That he's the gold standard.
The one tenor, as somebody
once said
well
that
has said
in the book. Yeah. Lindsay's book is, you see it right below his name in the guest section. Get the book and read it. It's really that special. And there's some very good books out there. This one is different, and it merits your time. Lindsay, good luck on the Opportunity Tour. I know it'll be a fabulous success with you pulling the strings on it. And thanks for being here tonight again. It was a lot of fun.
My absolute pleasure, Jeff. Thank you. We'll talk again soon.
Okay. Good night, Lindsay.
Bye-bye.
Okay, and that's our second hour tonight. We'll pause, and we'll come back with hour number 3.